This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. An extraordinary Wednesday. Congressman Mark Pocan will be with us in the next hour. He will be taking your calls for the hour in the second hour of our program. There's a lot in the news that I wanted to get to and through, and then we can kind of kick off our National Town Hall meeting here and have a conversation about it. To start out, you know, yesterday I was reading from Henry Wallace's April 7, 1944 op-ed, maybe it was April 9th, 1944 op-ed in the New York Times, in which he was talking about American fascism. You know, what is American fascism? Who are the American fascists and all that sort of thing? And, you know, the bottom line in my mind is that the billionaire fascists in America now, and I use that word advisedly, that is to say, you know, fascists in the old-fashioned sense of the word, the merger of state and corporate interests combined with belligerent nationalism. I don't know how you can call what we have right now anything other than that. That the billionaire fascists are coming for your Social Security, your Medicare, and your Medicaid. In fact, you know, right after Trump was elected, this was in 2016, in December of 2016. He was elected in November, obviously, you know, when the election happened. He was sworn in January. So in between those two, in December of 2016, Newt Gingrich gave a speech at the Heritage Foundation. I have a piece that'll be up on Alternet later on today, presumably, that has a link to that speech. You can see it's on C-SPAN and whatnot. And he said that with the Republicans taking control of the White House, the House, and the Senate, which they did in the election of 2016, that they were going to, quote, break out of the Franklin Delano Roosevelt model, end quote. That FDR model, of course, is what you and I refer to as the middle class. It was created by these so-called entitlement programs, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, minimum wage, and progressive taxation, and the right to unionize. I mean, that essentially created the modern American middle class, and destroying the right to unionize, which began aggressively in January 1981 when Reagan was sworn in and immediately went after PATCO, the Professional Air Traffic Controllers Organization, which had endorsed him in the election in exchange for a promise from him that he would allow them to strike or that he would help them get the new equipment that they needed to bring the air traffic control system in this country up to something safe and reasonable. When he didn't do that, they went on strike and he fired them all. And that was the beginning of this, you know, essentially this war. And then, of course, you know, you had the Supreme Court, you know, with the Buckley decision in 76 and then Citizens United in 2010, basically turning our country over to whoever the highest, you know, whoever's willing to spend the most on politics. Here in Portland, we're in the Vancouver, Washington media market, and we're getting these ads from this guy, Rob, I'm forgetting his last name, but he is the former Secretary of State or AG, whatever. He's a former senior official in the state of Washington, and he says, "Hi, I'm Rob, whatever my name is, and I'm a consumer advocate. And I was when I was the, you know, fill in the blank, the AG for the state of Washington." And then goes on to talk about how the carbon tax is a terrible thing and you have to do away with it. I look Rob up and it turns out he was the Republican and the ad is paid for by the oil companies. Surprise, surprise. But it's running constantly. Just like the, gee, we don't want to tax our groceries ad here, which, you know, is of course actually writing into the Constitution that the legislature of the state of Oregon may not pass a tax on sugary sweetened sodas or other sugary sweetened drinks, which we know are poison. I mean, they cause obesity, they cause type 2 diabetes. We know this. But it's like, you know, whoever's got the money is like running the show. So now that this is happening, right, now that they've got this massive debt. And you've been, you know, for 15 years I've been ranting about Jude Winiski and the two Santa Claus theory. Here it is. When Republicans are in office, run up the debt. When Democrats come into office, and right now, you know, Mitch McConnell is thinking, okay, in November the Democrats are going to be in the House of Representatives. They're going to control it. We're going to get them to shoot Santa. And so what does Mitch McConnell say?
Well, we're very concerned about this deficit. It's disturbing. And so, of course, we've got to look at spending on entitlement. Well, here's his exact quote. Spending on entitlement programs must be addressed by both Republicans and Democrats. Right. So the DSCC, the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee, just replied saying to Mitch McConnell, they said, every Republican Senate candidate is on the hook for Mitch McConnell's plan to cut Medicare and Social Security. First, it was jeopardizing pre-existing conditions coverage. Then it was pursuing an age tax that would charge older Americans more for care. Yes, the Republicans proposed that. And now it's targeting the benefits Americans have paid into. This is the new Republican platform. And by the way, the new report, Treasury Department just reported that the fiscal year 2018, which ended October 1st, 16 days ago, the 2018 year, federal year just ended, and we showed a deficit of $779 billion, three-quarters of $1 trillion is the deficit for last year, for 2018. Well, it turns out that, you know, according to the numbers of our Treasury Department, if we were not still in Iraq and Afghanistan, and if there had never been a Bush tax cut or a Trump tax cut, and things were going just fine before these huge tax cuts, it's not like people were suffering, we would right now have a $156 billion surplus, a budget surplus. Oh, and Jamal Khashoggi. This is starting to get bizarre. The New York Times is reporting that they cut his fingers off while he was still alive. And this report over on Raw Story, journalist Jamal by Travis Geddes, journalist Jamal Khashoggi was tortured and dismembered over 7 minutes while he was still alive, according to a Turkish source who heard an audio recording of the murder. The Washington Post columnist was abducted, and they go through all that, we know. From the consulate general's office at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul and dragged into a study next door. A witness downstairs heard horrendous screams, reports Middle East Eye. Quote, the consul himself was taken out of the room, the source told the website. There was no attempt to interrogate him. They had come to kill him. The head of forensic evidence in the Saudi General Security Department is a guy by the name of Salah Mohammed El-Tubaghi. He was part of this 15-man hit squad. He's the guy who brought the bone saw. The source said Tubaghi started to cut up Khashoggi's body on a table in the study while the journalist was still alive, and the killing took 7 minutes. Tubaghi put on headphones and listened to music as he dismembered Khashoggi's body with a bone saw, and he advised other squad members to do the same. Tubaghi said in the recording, when I do this job, I listen to music. You should do that too. This is getting very strange. And then Grassley and McConnell, this is absolutely bizarre. Let me share with you why this is so important. Since Congressman Pocan will be with us in the next hour, it's kind of an anything, whatever you want to talk about day. Because there's so much in the news. So if you want to comment on any of these things, feel free to give us a shout. What should we do about this? How do we deal with Saudi Arabia? But now you've got a federal judge, said to Betsy DeVos, you must enforce the law that Barack Obama put into place that protects kids who got screwed by for-profit colleges and these scams like Trump University. You have to protect those. And Betsy DeVos said, no, I'm not going to enforce that law. And for almost 2 years now, she has refused to enforce that law. And a federal judge just said, no, you have to do it. The attorneys general from 18 states and D.C. sued, and they won the lawsuit. A federal judge said, you got to do it. So that's kind of the good news. Here's the bad news. Chuck Grassley, well, actually, it was Mitch McConnell, cut this deal with Chuck Schumer to say, okay, we're going to recess Congress, we're all going to go home, and everybody can go home and campaign, And we're going to put these 15 federal judges through. Now, the 15 federal judges would have gone through one way or the other, so this wasn't like Schumer gave something up. But what McConnell did was, as soon as the Democrats left town, he started pushing more federal judges through with just the Republicans. And they're trying to push them onto the Ninth Circuit, which is the court that blocked Trump's Muslim ban. They're trying to pack the Ninth Circuit right now. One of these guys, Eric Miller, one of these judges that they want to put on the circuit, so the Ninth Circuit is out here. Maria Cantwell is, it's Washington State, that's the Ninth Circuit, and she's saying, I'm going to blue slip this guy. The home state senators have traditionally had the right to block a federal judge that they don't like. Mitch McConnell saying, no, sorry, I'm going to ignore you. You're not here. See you later. We're Republicans. We're going to put these judges on these courts so that the judges that, so that the next time Betsy DeVos decides she's not going to enforce the law, that she wants to stick it to the students, there's not going to be a federal judge to stand up for the students. You're going to have a federal judge who is a Republican appointee who is going to say, ha, screw the students. This is the way things are going. I got to tell you about Arkansas. I got to tell you about the Intelligence Committee. I mean, there's just so much going on here. And like I said, the fascists are coming for your Social Security and your Medicare. It's up next. Stick around. We'll be back with your calls and more of the news of the day right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Talk media for the rest of us. And welcome back. Chaz in Lakewood, Washington. Hey, Chaz, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on your Roku box. What's up?
Nazadrovia, comrade. Is another glorious day in Trumpistan, is it not?
Indeed.
With one exception, I don't know why we don't start calling them as we see them. Mitch McConnell held up, you were mentioning Mitch McConnell a few minutes ago, he held up Obama's Supreme Court pick, Merrick Garland, and then slammed through Boof, Kavanaugh. And I think we got to start considering these guys are treasonous, and that we feel free to label them as un-American, the party of Trump.
Yeah, these are certainly not traditional American values. This is just raw power politics. I mean, this is Machiavelli 101, and it's the thing that astonishes me is that more Americans are not horrified by this. The thing that relieves me slightly is that you do have the kind of David Jollies of the world, the former Republicans, who are saying, okay, enough already, Nicole Wallace and whatnot. But they're still Republicans. I mean, they still want to privatize Social Security. David Jolly will go on TV, and Nicole Wallace will run her show, and they'll all talk about, oh my God, Trump is so terrible, or Joe Scarborough for that matter. But they still want to privatize Social Security. They still want to do away with Medicare. They still want to, go ahead, Chaz.
Right, and cut back on voting rights. I mean, it just, I shared on Facebook something that just when I saw it blew my mind, that the people who originally inhabited this country, this continent, now essentially, you remember George Carlin's pitch about crowding them off the continent entirely, and now we're taking away their voting rights. The original inhabitants now are not even considered residents.
Right, in North Dakota, yeah. Yeah, this is amazing, and you're talking about 70,000 Native Americans in North Dakota, which is 10% of the entire voting population of that state. And the Supreme Court just backed them up, just backed up the Republicans in North Dakota and said, yeah, you can say to folks, if you don't have a street address, if you only have a post office box, you can't vote. Now, I don't recall seeing that in the Constitution, but the Supreme Court seems to think it's there.
I'm trying to imagine the children of these people that are inhabiting the party of Trump looking their grandfathers in the eyes and being proud of them. That's not going to happen.
Hard to say. hard to say. God, I mean, you've got this whole generation of Proud Boys and whatnot, all these young people coming up who are like, oh, yeah, we love Trump and we're going to go out and kick some ass. And it's hard to say, Chaz. I don't think that.
And how does that guy yesterday have the temerity to tell you, do you know what's going on in Portland?
Yeah. I kind of do.
I'm all over the place, Tom. You got more callers. Thank you much.
Yeah, no, it's all good, Chaz. It's all good. Actually, I got 20 seconds here, which it wouldn't be fair to put a caller on with 20 seconds. But it's
gotcha.
it's just this is just nuts. And your thing about Trumpistan, I don't know how to take that viral, but it's you know.
I'll keep pushing it. You know where to find it.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot, Chaz. Good to hear from you.
On the Twitter feed. Thanks.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. Keep tweeting this stuff, and I'll keep retweeting it. There's some amazing stuff out there. We'll be back with more of the news of the day and your calls right after this. It's 21 and a half minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. So Grassley and McConnell, the headline over at Daily Kos by Joan McCarter, Grassley and McConnell, screw Democrats, are still packing courts with Trump's judges in recess. This to basically save Betsy DeVos and the others from ever having to worry about a federal court blocking another Muslim ban or saying, hey, you know, you've got to stand up for these students who got screwed. Meanwhile, the Republicans are now, this is hysterical, right? The House Intelligence Committee, Devin Nunes' committee, has refused to go along with any of the subpoenas that the Democrats wanted to issue. They refused to interview any of the witnesses in the Trump-Russia stuff that the Democrats wanted to interview. They've completely politicized the entire process. They issued a report that they didn't even discuss with the Democrats. No Democrats knew about it or signed off on it, saying, it's all good, Trump is cool. They've spent millions and millions of dollars investigating Hillary Clinton and her emails and the Uranium One deal and all this other kind of stuff. This is the Republicans on the House Intelligence Committee, right? And right now, fully one-third of all the Republicans in the House of Representatives have put their name on the list to ask Paul Ryan or the next Speaker of the House, the next Republican leader of the House, if it flips to the Democrats, to put them on the Intelligence Committee, because apparently that's the place where you can most effectively suck up to Trump and use it for massive fundraising, become a superstar. But now that it's possible that the Democrats are going to take it over, Tom Rooney, the Republican from Florida who's on the House Intelligence Committee, said this. The House Intelligence Committee has to revert back to the way it was, sort of like the sleeping little classified committee that nobody ever hears about. Right. Republicans have developed a sudden real concern about how the nation suffers from a too highly politicized Intelligence Committee, just as the Democrats are about to take control of it. Meanwhile, speaking of federal judges and things that Republicans are up to, you'll recall it was John Roberts, the deciding vote in the U.S. Supreme Court, who said that on the Obamacare law, you know, Obamacare said that all the states have to expand Medicaid, and make it available to everyone in the state. And all the red states, not all of them, but most of the red states, the Republican-run states, said, No, we don't want to do that. We don't want to give people health care. Are you kidding? And they sued. They took it all the way to the Supreme Court, and John Roberts said, okay, you don't have to give people Medicaid. But down in Arkansas, they had a Democratic governor there for a little while, Mike Beebe, and he expanded Medicaid to cover the entire state of Arkansas, which was great. I mean, this is 76,000 people. Excuse me, no, it was more than that. It was close to 250,000 people. And now there's a Republican governor, Asa Hutchinson. And so what he has done is require that you must work 80 hours a month in order to stay on Medicaid. And not only do you have to work the 80 hours a month, but you have to report it on a state website. Even if you are working low-wage jobs and you can't afford the internet or a computer, you still have to report it on the website. The population in the United States is most likely not to have access to the internet are poor people. And on top of that, the state keeps taking the website down, just like Trump has already announced that when the enrollment period opens for Obamacare in November, they're going to start taking the Obamacare sign-up site down for maintenance, which they did last year too. So you can't even sign up, which is bizarre. So here's the news now. That's kind of the setup for the news. Here's the actual news. This is Joan McCarter writing over the Daily Kos. The state of Arkansas announced Monday it's kicked 4,100 people off its Medicaid program for failure to meet the state's new work requirement. That's on top of 4,300 people who lost coverage last month and another 4,800 who are going to lose it next month. Now, Kentucky tried to do the same thing, by the way, and a federal judge blocked it. Another reason why Mitch McConnell is pushing federal judges onto these courts, even while the Democrats have gone home to campaign. And he lied to Chuck Schumer that he was saying, I would never do that. He's doing it right now. It's amazing. Back with your calls after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
We'll pick up your thoughts on all this stuff and a little bit more of the news after the break here. Stick around. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you and Carol in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, Carol, what's on your mind today?
Oh, Tom, I hope I can be calm about this. I am so tired of the misuse of the word entitlement, mm-hmm. and I am so sick of hearing about this whole Social Security thing. When Ronald Reagan said he fixed Social Security, what they did was raise the age and change the tax. Everybody knew this was coming because of the boomers. But the thing that they did that was the sneakiest of all is Social Security had always been listed not on the budget. It had been listed someplace else because what comes in is what goes out.
Right.
No tax money, income tax, let's clarify.
Yeah.
No, not one dime of income tax money covers Social Security. That is paid for by you and your employer, and it is only due to you, and it is due to you when you retire.
Correct.
So when they changed where they looked at it, now they can call it part of the budget. It isn't part of the budget. It never was intended to be part of the budget, and nobody ever says Social Security, which is a program that pays for itself, and Medicare, which
right.
pays for itself. Medicaid is an extra.
Right.
But a small raise in those taxes or Medicare for all would completely eliminate the problem.
Yeah, if we just did away with the cap.
Yeah, and we have awful, nasty people in Washington, D.C. who just can't stand anybody to have anything if they're not a millionaire.
It seems that that's the case. I think that there's actually a deeper philosophical argument that the conservatives are making to themselves. I don't just think this. I mean, you can read it in Russell Kirk's book, The Conservative Mind, and in numerous other publications over the years. They used to be much more upfront about this. William F. Buckley used to talk about this right out loud, which is that if you have a stable and secure middle class, the conservatives feel or worry that will lead to social instability. It'll lead to things. This is what Russell Kirk predicted in 1951 was, as the middle class was starting to emerge as a result of FDR's policies, that if the middle class got strong enough, you would see women demanding equal place in the workplace. You would see young people refusing to honor their elders. And I forget the list, but there was a couple of things there that he laid out basically. And sure enough, it happened. I mean, in the 60s, they legalized birth control pills in 61, and boom, you had the women's movement. And they legalized abortion in 73, and throughout that two-decade era, more or less. You had young people refusing to go to Vietnam, and all the Republicans sat around and go, yep, Russell Kirk was a prophet. We've got to destroy this middle class and turn these people back into the working poor so they will just shut up and go to work and, you know, stop voting, stop hassling us, stop protesting, stop demanding things, and we can get on the about the business of getting rich. And that's what's going on, in my opinion, Carol.
And Ronald, and the current occupant of the White House is doing that in a different way with all of this craziness. I scream every night at MSNBC for talking as if this is a normal man.
Yeah.
He is not. He will never be. He is not going to change. He's 72 years old. It's carved in stone what he is made of, and nothing that he is made of is very nice. I almost had a fit the other night. Ali Gelshi, who's substituting, I think, for Lawrence O'Donnell,
yeah,
called something that Donald Trump said a lie.
Yeah.
On the air.
Ali Gelshi is solid. I mean, you know, he's as a journalist, he used to work for Al Jazeera, and he's been around the block. He's a Canadian immigrant to the United States. And he gets it. He gets all kinds of stuff, and he will speak the truth, on occasion. And I have a lot of respect for him as a journalist. Although I would still like to see the so-called liberal network actually be liberal and actually have liberals on instead of just anti-Trump Republicans. But yeah, I'm with you, Carol. I need to move along, but thank you for the call and thanks for listening to us there in St. Paul. Jesse in Miami. Hey Jesse, what's up?
Hey, hi Tom. So much. Hey. I want to get to the basics. Mr. Cheney said that, that deficits don't mean nothing.
Yeah, his exact quote was deficits don't matter, yeah. No, actually his exact quote was Ronald Reagan taught us that deficits don't matter. And what he was saying was Reagan was the first guy to do the two Santa Claus theory. He tripled the national debt while he was in office, and then as soon as he left, the Republicans started screaming that the Democrats needed to cut Social Security. Back to you, Jesse.
Okay, thanks. What's behind saying the deficits don't mean nothing? These guys know the whole system is a scam. So we're getting all upset about they're going to burn us, when the deficits get high, and then they start playing Scrooge and all of that. So we go into a song and dance for nothing.
Yeah. Well, it's not for nothing. I mean, Social Security literally has never failed, has never missed a check. It's never, since 1936, it's never missed a payment. And that's a big deal. That's not a scam. That actually works. And the changes...
Can I get this in?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's important. They say it don't mean nothing because they printing money. Cheney said we create reality.
Yeah, although that was in a different context. He was talking about, we can convince people that there's weapons of mass destruction.
It's still the same because everything we see in here is what they control.
Yeah.
They don't even have to report. You was right about the crash of 16. It happened, but it was political.
Yeah. Well, actually, there was an economic downturn in 2016 that wasn't only reported after the fact because it was obscured by the rising stock market. And we, more proof that the stock market is not the economy. Jesse, thank you. Good points all. Susan in Brunswick, Georgia. Hey, Susan, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I read an article in a magazine, and I also looked it up on the government website, and it seems to be true. And I wanted to make everybody aware of this. It's called Save the American Workers Act, mm-hmm. and you can look that up. And what this is, it's going to get rid of the Affordable Care Act and gut that and all of that. But in this bill that they're ready to pass, what's also stuffed in there is any corporation and people where they get their health care through their jobs, companies, whatever, that if you're working under 30 and 39 hours per week, which a lot of companies, people are still getting their benefits with those hours. But now, if you're going to work only 39 or 30 hours a week, they are going to be allowed to get rid of your health insurance through your job, which means that they're only going to give health care to people that are going to be working over 40 hours a week.
Right.
Most people don't work 40 hours a week, but they're still getting their benefits. So they're going to get people working at only 39 hours, and they are not going to get any health care whatsoever from their jobs. And I think this is super-duper important, and people need to be aware of this. We are going back to the 1930s. And one other point real quick, Tom, if you would. When you get your guest on, can you really go over the cutting of the Social Security and the Medicare? I'm in my 60s, and that's something that's really weighing on me. And just what exactly does that mean? What age group are they hitting? And what are the Democrats, you know, planning on getting that message out? Or just to be a little...
Oh, the Democrats, Susan, are screaming bloody murder right now. It's just not being covered much in the media. But, the press releases I'm getting, the notices of town hall meetings and speeches, and you know, the Democrats are flipped out about this, number one. Number two, if you're in your 60s, you probably don't have anything to worry about. Odds are that they'll do it the same way Reagan did. You know, Reagan raised the Social Security retirement age from 65 to 67, but not in his lifetime, right? This was done in 1983, but it only took effect this year. So, you know, or next year, I think, is actually the big year. And although it went up to 66 a couple of years ago. And so, you know, they'll do it like that. They'll do it so that the impact is not seen while they're running for re-election. The impact will be, you know, in literally one generation later. So it's the young Gen Xers and the millennials who they're intending to screw. Those are the ones that they want to steal the money away from. And Reagan doubled the Social Security tax. He also made Social Security income taxable, which reduced the take-home pay to pretty much everybody, and you know all these other things. So, and it doesn't surprise me, Susan, that the Republicans would name a piece of legislation that is designed to make it easier. Right now, it depends on the state, it depends on what kind of job you have, and there's all these, you know, variables and if-thens, but broadly speaking, people who work less than 30 hours a week are generally not considered to have any legal right to demand benefits, whereas people who work over 30 hours a week can, and that's why a lot of employers keep people to 29 or 30 hours a week. And you're right. If they raise that up to 40, or 39 hours a week, suddenly employers are going to go from 29 hours to 39 hours, and again with no benefits or anything. And this is the new reality in America, or at least if the Republicans continue to hold power, which is why it's so important. And Susan, thank you for the call. Why it's so important that we all get to the polls. And, you know, odds are your voter registration period has closed or is closing today, but it's still not too late, and it won't be too late right up through, you know, the first week of November to double check that you have not been purged from the rolls by the Republicans yet.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Because this is absolutely how they have won past elections. It's how Bush got the White House, purging the vote down in Florida. This is absolutely what they're all about. And welcome back. Cheryl in Hillsboro, Oregon, watching us on Facebook Live. Hey, Cheryl. What's up?
Hello. Yes, I am on SSDI.
So you're on Social Security Disability Insurance.
Disability insurance. I am 61, but my concern has been, I keep hearing that they won't touch Social Security, and I know I don't trust that promise at all,
right.
But what my concern is disability going to be treated differently because it's not true Social Security, it's a subset.
I think that's a very serious and legitimate concern, Cheryl. What we've seen over the last couple of Republican administrations, particularly during the Bush era, that they have made it harder and harder to qualify for Social Security disability. And so it's now a process that typically takes, you know, at least two tries, often a lawsuit, and typically takes about 2 years. I don't know if that was your experience.
It wasn't, actually. I was able to get it on the first go-round.
Okay, well, good. But, you know, my guess is that what they'll do is they'll tighten up the requirements, they'll make it more difficult, and they'll also, I mean, they did this just with the last budget. They cut millions of dollars. I forget the exact amount. I think $215 million sticks in my head, but I can't swear to it. But they cut millions of dollars out of the Social Security budget, not in terms of benefits, but laying off employees so that when you are applying for disability insurance, you know, you've got, you know, half as many people dealing with the same number of applications, and so it takes twice as long. And so that slows the process down. So, yeah, I think that the disability payments, and again, odds are that you will not be the victim of this. Odds are it would be our children's generation who will be the victims of this. But, they're gonna go after it. There's no doubt in my mind.
Okay, thank you very much for your answer.
Thank you, Cheryl. Good talking to you. I appreciate the call. Michael in Redding, California, listening on our Pacifica affiliate there, 90.9 FM. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just moved back here to California from Maui. And over in Hawaii, if you work over 18 hours, I believe, you're covered with health care.
Yeah, it's required that employers do that. Yes.
So I had an autistic daughter that was born out there, and the services were amazing. And then I moved back to California, and I've just been getting hit left and right from the school district to health insurance. It's unreal what's happening. And my second part was, who's there to keep these guys following the law that's been laid out to protect the American people?
Well, historically, it's been federal judges, which is why Mitch McConnell is working so hard to pack the federal judiciary and why he blocked Obama's federal judge nominations for the last 2 years of the Obama presidency. And he's now flooding all those empty positions. And, of course, it was Democrats in Congress. I mean, if Democrats took control of both the House and the Senate, you could see this entire freight train, you know, going after Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and everything else. You could see this whole thing just come to a screeching halt, but it's going to require an enormous turnout. So, you know, Michael, there are organizations, even though you live in Redding, California, you live in a blue state, there are organizations that, you know, if you want to do some phone banking where you can be making phone calls into North Dakota or into South Carolina or into Florida or into Georgia to help to get out the vote effort, there's things all of us can do. Check out Rock the Vote, for example. But there's a lot of things we can do, Michael, and we need to. Your experience is, you know, yeah, spot on. When I was in Hawaii, I learned that 18-hour thing. That's impressive. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Joan in Nashville, Tennessee. Hey, Joan, what's on your mind today?
So much, Tom, so much. I called initially to say that I've been thinking ever since Trump was elected and he started doing the things that he is doing, that in essence he is the personification of America without the thin veneer of civility and democracy and fairness.
Mm.
The way I see it is that if you look at each country or each society as a triangle, and at the very top of the triangle it's very small, and there's a limited number of people who can fit at the top, and you can look at that configuration across countries and societies. And so basically what you have is the people at the top relate to each other as opposed to relating to the people at the bottom of the pyramid in whatever country or society you want to look at. Well, I'll say most of them, not all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And what whites are experiencing now is what black people have always experienced in this country.
Yep.
And so what I say is, welcome to our world. And I'm not saying that to be pejorative in any way, although I don't apologize for being angry because I deserve to be angry. But what I'm saying is that when the rest of society looks at whoever they have marginalized and they accept the ill treatment of the marginalized, they don't seem to realize that eventually that same negative behavior is going to move in towards them.
You're right.
The rich do not care about the poor. They never have. If you look at European society before they came over here to the continent of what they're calling America, poor whites were doing as badly as they're doing now. And there weren't any black people for them to blame.
Yeah.
And this is what they're going towards again, and they seem to be running towards it. It seems as though anything that hurts black people, they are fine with, even if it means they have to suffer too.
Yeah.
But as long as they get a half a crumb more than black people, they're satisfied if the rich whites take the whole loaf of bread. I can't understand that. And
yeah.
You are a historian, and I think I've read somewhere that in the beginning, poor whites and black people intermarried, lived together.
Yeah, there was a fair amount of that up in
the
Northeast.
Owners decided that they would put a wedge between those two groups, tell the whites that their lot laid with the rich whites, whereas the rich whites think the same way about poor whites as poor whites feel about black people.
Yep.
And they just can't seem to come together.
Yeah.
And the technique that the rich whites use is very successful, and they continue to use it, and they should, because it's successful. All you have to do is give one group a half a crumb more than the other group, or even within a group, give some factions within that group a few more crumbs than the rest of the group, and you've wiped out whatever goal they had directed against the wealthy whites. And I mean, it's successful. So,
yeah, no, it's divide and conquer, Joan. And you know, this is what Lyndon Johnson pointed out when he said the Republican strategy is essentially, if you can convince the poorest white person that he's better than the richest black person, he'll let you pick his pocket. And that is, you know, that has been the Republican strategy. LBJ called it out in 67, and it's been going on ever since. And it was going on long before that. And your point about the thin veneer of civilization, I think, is a really important one. It's like the thin layer of the American middle class. These things are there by virtue of a whole lot of people creating structures that put them in place and hold them in place. And the Republicans are systematically destroying those structures. It's like they're taking the girder beams out of the building, and eventually it's just going to be this shell, and it's going to collapse in on itself. And, you know, whether you call it civilization or democracy or you know, the United States of America or whatever. And that's one of the things that concerns me so much. Joan, thank you. Brilliant analysis. Thank you so much. John in Edgerton, Wisconsin. Hey, John, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. My idea is I've been going door to door for Iron Stash around here, and
Randy Bryce.
It comes down to it's the whole thing of fascism. I usually call it corporatism, because see, we have a lot of union people around here, and we understand that the corporations, they don't want to hear from the people. The one thing they hate the worst is to have the people tell them how to run their business.
Right.
And it almost seems like now Trump is using, or the Republicans are using, the exact same example of union busting, and they they don't want the people to have a voice.
Yeah. They're right up front about it. up front about it. And then you got big corporations that are right up front about it too. I mean, you know, Amazon now is having their managers, when they took over Whole Foods, they're having their managers sit down and watch these videos about how evil unions are and how they screw things up.
Yeah,
that's
basically, and they'll lie to you right out front. And you know it's a lie because everybody else is working the union around here. And the other point I wanted to bring up too is we used to have a shoe factory in Edgerton, and we used to make military shoes. You know, we had Les Aspin down here as our representative, and we used to get a lot of pork barrels. It just seems like pork is bad, but now they just ship it all overseas.
Yeah. Well, that was, you know, the Buy America Act was passed in the 1930s that said that the federal government has to source products from American manufacturers. But there's a provision in there for a waiver from the president. And Reagan started passing out these waivers like they were candy. to federal agencies so that they could buy things from overseas. And now it's just absolutely routine. Every president has done it ever since. John, thanks for the call.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.